Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on judges, friends or foe, judicial independence and accountability. I am joined by Senior Barrister Mark Guthrie from Red Lion Chambers in London. Mark has held a number of roles as a Senior Human Rights Officer and Rule of Law Advisor, and he has led the development of policy relating to judicial independence, integrity in public life, and he has carried out work to promote separation of powers across the Commonwealth. Mark has an in-depth knowledge and understanding of the political, judicial and legal systems across the world. Mark, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks, Hattie, and thanks for the introduction.
Yes, no, absolutely. So here we are, judges, friends or foe. I think this is going to get the attention of our listeners in an interesting way, because judicial independence and accountability, I don't think it's a term that we hear often in conversation around the dinner table or, you know, just generally in society. So in introducing this topic, I just want to say that, you know, as a result of the pandemic, the government has been looking at ways and making efforts to keep the courts running in order to prevent further backlog of cases. In September 2020, the Law Society and many other media outlets reported that Judge Keith Rayner, who was sitting at Woolwich Crown Court, attacked the Minister of Justice, alleging that he was put under improper pressure by senior judges to decide a case. Can we just start, please, Mark, by explaining what do we mean by judicial independence? What does that term mean? And what is it independent from?
Okay. Well, there are three branches of government under the theory of the separation of powers. And the judiciary is one of those branches of government. The other two are the executive, what we colloquially call the government, which technically is the executive. And then the third branch is the legislature, parliament. So we have three branches of government, and they are, or they should be, separate from each other, and they each perform different roles, and they perform, there is a role of checks and balances, and the judiciary has an important role in performing a check and balance on how government performs. And in order to do that effectively, it needs to be independent.
Yes.
And in order to do that, to be independent, it needs to be independent as an institution. So we need to have institutional judicial independence. And then the other thing to remember is that judges are independent from each other. Although you have a judiciary, each judge is independent from the other, and that means that each judge is responsible for their own judgment. Of course, there are cases, and it often happens, that one judge will have a complex legal issue and will consult another judge, ask for advice. But at the end of the day, when a judge gives judgment, that is her or his judgment alone. It isn't the judgment of another. So judicial independence really has two strands. You have an independent judiciary as a whole, and then you have judges as individuals who are independent from each other.
Yes, and I guess what we're trying to say as well is that judges must be free, you know, to exercise their powers without interference from the government, from litigants, or, you know, the media, or powerful individuals or entities such as large companies. So they must be free to exercise their judicial powers without any influence. That's essentially, you know, a big part of this, isn't it?
Well, it is, yes. And it's also judicial independence is closely connected to judicial impartiality.
Right.
So that when somebody comes before a judge, they are treated the same as anybody else. If you have two litigants before the judge, the judge treats them impartially.
Yes, and I guess, and I'm saying that because I mentioned at the start of the podcast that Judge Keith Raynor said he was put under improper pressure, and he said actually that he felt pressured to extend, in that case, the custody time limit in a case. He felt pressured by the government because the government is saying, listen, we've got to speed all this up. We've got to not get the backlog of cases increased. And he said he felt pressured by the government, and he criticised the government for feeling that pressure. So what we're saying is actually judicial independence, which is, you know, a huge part of our legal system, means that judges need to feel free and be free to make their judgments and decisions without the pressure of the government or anybody else for that matter. So why is judicial independence so important? Because I have to say that when you think of the legal system and you think of judges, many, many, many years ago, probably when I was very, very young and a child, I would have thought, well, actually, judges are linked to the government. It's all part of the wider picture of being, run by the country and the law. That's all what it is. I would have never naturally have thought, actually, judges are completely independent of the government. But why is it so important, would you say, Mark?
Well, I mean, you're right there, Hattie, in that the judiciary isn't completely independent of the government. And historically, in this country, there have been very close links between the judiciary and the government. We have the position here of Lord Chancellor. Since 2005, the Lord Chancellor has been the Minister of Justice and a politician. But before that, the Lord Chancellor, there wasn't much separation of powers. The Lord Chancellor combined three different roles. The Lord Chancellor was a member of the government, was head of the judiciary, and was a member of the House of Lords. So there wasn't much separation of powers. And obviously, the judiciary is linked to the government in that the salaries are of a judge are paid by the government, although there may be guarantees to make sure that the level of pay is determined independently. That's a long way of answering why judicial independence is so important. And it's this. Judicial independence is one of the ingredients of the rule of law, of which we talk probably more about than judicial independence. And alongside judicial independence, there are other ingredients of the rule of law, such as access to justice, your ability to go to court and to find legal remedies, the right to a fair trial, human rights. All of those are connected and independent upon an independent judiciary. You can't have a fair trial without an independent judiciary.
Yes, no, indeed.
And you need an independent judiciary in order that there are checks and balances on what the government is doing. And two very well-known examples of that in the UK was the decision of the Supreme Court that the advice that the government gave last year to the Queen to prorogue Parliament was unlawful. So you need an independent judiciary in order to get that decision. and then also the decision on triggering Article 50 for Brexit.
Yes.
That was, again, a decision of the Supreme Court, which said that Parliament had to take a vote on that issue, and you need an independent judiciary. But that's layers. At a high level. Yes.
Layers and layers in it.
But let's put it, to make it more simply, say, for example, you're a civil servant. You work for a government department, and say you have an injury at work, and it results in you having to go to court. So you are suing your employer, the government, and you need to know that the judge who's going to hear your case is not someone who has been appointed by the government, so that she will do the government's bidding. You want to know that the person who is there to hear your case is independent and isn't going to do the easy thing, isn't going to do what is popular.
Or be biased or favourable. Exactly. And you know,
or just be, you know, owe their position to somebody in power.
Yes. No, indeed.
And in particular, to owe a position, you know, to somebody who is a politician.
Yes. Yes, no, indeed. And I mean, judicial independence, you know, is important because it guarantees that a judge is free to decide honestly and impartially in accordance with the law, you know, and without concern or fear of interference or improper, as you say, influence from anybody, be it the government or any outside sort of body to the case that's going on. Might be in relation to the person and persons they're judging, or the company or institution that they're judging. But so, how is judicial independence guaranteed in the UK, Mark? Is it guaranteed? Like, what's the bottom line right. there? Let's hear that. Yeah.
Okay, well, there are two ways of answering that question, and I'll do my
best. It's not a yes or no, then.
Well, firstly, let's just say is, you can put in place things to try to promote and uphold judicial independence. We're somewhat at a disadvantage in the UK in that we're one of a very few number of countries which doesn't have a written constitution. So we have to look for the framework for judicial independence in the UK is by reference to convention, how things are done, and by statute. And so there is the Constitutional Reform Act of 2005, the same one I mentioned, which abolished the Lord Chancellor, which abolished the political role of the legal role of the Lord Chancellor. But there is a statutory duty upon the current Lord Chancellor, who is also the Minister of Justice, to uphold the independence of the judiciary. And that's why there was a big outcry a couple of years ago when the then Lord Chancellor, Liz Truss, didn't do enough to defend the judiciary when they were attacked as being enemies of the people. Wow. The Lord Chancellor, Master of the Rolls, in relation to the first Brexit case. In countries which have a written constitution, there are usually constitutional guarantees that the judiciary is independent. So that's the framework. But how do you try to achieve an independent judiciary is you ensure, or you try to ensure, that the appointments process is independent, fair and transparent, and it's free of political influence. And
yes.
So here in England, we have the Judicial Appointments Commission, which is responsible for advertising judicial vacancies, interviews candidates, and makes recommendations to the Lord Chancellor for appointments.
We talk about appointments. How are judges appointed? I mean, that's quite interesting, isn't it? Particularly when you talk about judges or you think about judges in the High Court and the Supreme Court and sort of the hierarchy of judges. How are they appointed?
Well, there is, as I say, vacancies advertised by the Judicial Appointments Commission.
Literally in that form.
Yeah.
And it's a job application. and you can see it and apply as an independent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That, okay. Yeah. Well, that answers that one then.
Okay. So, and that's right. And the Judicial Appointments Commission is actually not headed by a lawyer.
And that's interesting.
And there are non-legal people as well. There are also legal people on it who sit on the Appointments Commission. They interview candidates and they make a recommendation to the Lord Chancellor for an appointment.
Right.
So that's the appointments process. But just to go back to your question about guarantees, I think we've been rather smug and complacent in this country about judicial independence. As you said at the beginning, we haven't talked much about it. And people perhaps have taken it for granted. The independence of the judiciary have taken it for granted. But actually, it's come under threat very recently. There's been talk about involving politicians in the judicial appointments process. In my view, that's a very dangerous development, because then you do start to undermine the independence of the judiciary.
It's and a bit like the apples and pears, Mark, isn't it? I guess just don't mix the apples and pears.
Well, yes, because politicians have different interests, and understandably, if you've got a job to do, you don't want to have somebody whom you perceive as interfering in your job.
No, indeed.
And so there can be a tendency for politicians to view judges as interfering, and that's what's behind the current moves to restrict the right of ordinary people to seek judicial review on government decisions. Judicial review is a check by the court on decision making.
Mm.
And that obviously can be very inconvenient for government.
Yes. You know, well, it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of time, it's a lot of resource.
And money.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very inconvenient for the government when judges come along and say, I'm sorry, you can't deport this person because you haven't done so according to the law. And, well, but what's inconvenient isn't necessarily right. And that's why it's very important. And it may not be very popular. The decisions of the court may not be very popular with the government. But that doesn't mean that what is popular is necessarily right.
Yes, no, I
hear
you.
Or what is unpopular is necessarily wrong.
Wrong, yes, indeed, it goes both
ways.
It's
all about the rule of law is not what is popular.
Yes.
It's what is right according to the law.
Yes, no, indeed.
And it's there to, you know, people think these things are not important until it affects them.
Yes, like most things, really, isn't it? I mean, many wonder why steps are not taken to dismiss judges or force them to resign as a result of criticism, for example, for handing down soft sentences or doing things that people don't think have been absolutely accountable for in the face of criticism. Why is it that that judges are treated, it appears to be that they're treated differently from many others, from government ministers and public officials to directors and employees of companies. You know, you often hear when a company has done something negligible or they haven't been accountable, you know, the CEO and the top of the food chain starts to come down and people start to resign or they're asked to leave. But why are judges, they almost seem untouchable, Mark. What's that about?
Well, they're not, is a short answer. I mean, the thing to remember is that judges are not civil servants. They are members of that branch of government. And in order to be independent, they need security of tenure so that they are protected in the event of their taking unpopular decisions. And judges have got to know that they have that protection. If they were liable to dismissal at whim, well, then you wouldn't have an independent judiciary. Judges would be frightened of doing the right thing. And they are accountable to their judicial oath. And can I just read out what it is? It says the judicial oath in England is, I will do right to all manner of people after the laws and usages of the realm, without fear or favour, affection or ill will. And the important part of that are the last few words, without fear or favour, affection or ill will.
Well, so I have to say,
they're accountable to that oath.
One of the things that's been very interesting to hear, and one of the things I will say is that I'm very surprised that it's so simple. You know, it's something that's come out of the legal system that's quite high up on the food chain. Yeah. And it's quite a simple paragraph, isn't it?
It is. But the thing is, judges are not above the law. If a judge falls in standards of personal conduct, it is possible for members of the public to make a complaint to the Judicial Conduct Investigations Office, and then if that were to be found to be proved, disciplinary measures would be taken against the judge by the Lord Chief Justice, who is the head of the judiciary. So the accountability is different, but it exists.
Yes. Well, I have to say, I think that has to be a good thing. And in my mind, in any event, it feeds into the judicial independence element of it. If I hear what you're saying about a judge having the protection of the government and the laws, so that they're not, sacked from their position or asked to resign if a decision isn't favourable for various reasons. But I also think there needs to be some accountability in some shape or form. So we've got time to discuss this one more area. So I'm very happy that we can. What rights do people have to appeal judges' decisions or about the personal conduct of a judge? I know you've just briefly touched on that. But in relation to judges' decisions, you know, you do hear in cases where the judge says, I do not give you the right to appeal.
Yes, so that same might be in a criminal case in the Crown Court, and there are cases where judges at the end of a trial, there's a conviction, and the judge might refuse leave to appeal. It's very rare for lawyers in those at the end of, say, a trial to ask for leave to appeal. So what happens is there is a right to appeal.
And that's an automatic right unless a judge says there's no right to appeal. Is that right, both in civil and criminal?
Well, on a criminal case, what would happen is somebody is convicted and then their lawyer would provide advice. And if the lawyer has advised that there are arguable grounds of appeal, would apply to the Court of Appeal for leave to appeal. And what happens is the Court of Appeal looks at an application for leave to appeal and decides whether there's an arguable case. You don't have an automatic, you can't appeal in every circumstance simply because you don't like the results of the case. There has to be, for example, a material irregularity, something seriously went wrong in the trial, or the judge misdirected the jury. If the Court of Appeal agrees that there is an arguable case, then the case goes before the Court of Appeal for them to decide, and they must overturn a conviction if they find that it is unsafe.
I have to say, when I was looking at appeals and I saw that the majority, 52% of appeals are apparently in immigration and asylum cases. I found that quite interesting. I thought that's quite a large number over 50% of appeals come into fall into that category, and apparently 39% of appeals from immigration and asylum are upheld, which I thought was very interesting. But there you are. Perhaps we need to do another podcast, Mark, on appeals and just cover that area on its own.
I think you may well be right, Hattie.
Mark, thank you ever so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure to speak to you.
And to you, Hattie. Thanks for having me, and thanks to everybody for listening.
Thank you. And I'll say to our listeners, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com.